From WHQR Public Media, this is The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for joining us. If you're like me and you work or live or just spend a lot of time in downtown Wilmington, it can be easy to forget that if you drive an hour or less in just about any given direction, you'll travel deep into North Carolina's agricultural territory. And if you've ever flown into ILM Airport, you've seen this. Rows of metal-roofed chicken coops and the telltale discoloration of hog waste lagoons, visible mile after mile until, all at once, they seem to give way to the suburbs of Leland, Hampstead, and Wilmington. These are concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs. Around the state, they're home to millions of hogs and nearly a billion chickens and turkeys. It's seriously big business, a major economic driver, but it's also a major polluter. And the tug of war between industry and environmental concerns has been in a relative stalemate since 2007, when the state put a moratorium on new and expanded farms. That was done in the hopes that new ways of managing animal waste would emerge, but with the exception of a few pilot programs, that hasn't really happened. For years, I've wanted to really dig into this issue, but I haven't had the bandwidth. Thankfully, with the generous support of the Fourth Estate Fund, WHQR was able to partner with environmental reporter David Borax, who some of you may remember from his time at our sister station in Charlotte, WFAE, and the reporting he did for WHQR here in the wake of Hurricane Florence. Last year, David dug into the impacts of rising sea levels on coastal Carolina, and starting earlier this year, he started reporting out CAFO Country, a four-part series on CAFOs produced for WHQR. Later on the show, we'll also hear from Inside Climate News' Lisa Sorg, who's been digging into the latest on some of the same environmental concerns about CAFOs. But first, let's get into our CAFO Country series. Early in the planning stages of this series, we talked about how the scale of the CAFO industry is really striking from the air. And as it turns out, that's where David kicked off his reporting.
The best way to see the scale of industrial animal farming in North Carolina is from the air. Pilot Rolf Wallen revs up his single-engine Cessna Skylane on the runway at Duplin County Airport, about 80 miles southeast of Raleigh.
Duplin County traffic, Skylane 9 of Raid is departing runway 23, Duplin County.
Wallen volunteers with the nonprofit South Wings to fly people over sites of environmental concern. With us is Kemp Burdett, the Cape Fear Riverkeeper, who keeps an eye on pollution threats along the river and its tributaries. That includes CAFOs.
The route is just kind of a tour of Duplin and Sampson, the two most heavily concentrated counties in North Carolina for both swine and poultry CAFOs. And the Cape Fear Basin in general is the most heavily concentrated watershed in the world for swine CAFO. And poultry is expanding rapidly, frequently right next door to swine, which I'll point out that as we go to.
Rows of long metal-roofed barns are visible on all sides of the plain.
I mean, everywhere you look, you see either a swine or a poultry CAFO. This one's discharging into the lagoon right now. You can see it coming out of that blue pipe.
Duplin and Sampson counties not only lead North Carolina, but they have more hog farms than any other counties in the nation. North Carolina is behind only Iowa and Minnesota, with 8 million pigs on nearly 2,500 farms that are grown and processed into meat here. The rest, around 800,000 more, are sent to other states for finishing and processing. It's big business, says Roy Lee Lindsay of the North Carolina Pork Council.
Today we're third in terms of producing market hogs, and roughly 13% of all the pigs in the United States are born right here in North Carolina.
Today's big farms with tens of thousands of hogs each are a big change from a few decades ago, when most farms had fewer than a couple thousand animals. Like hogs, poultry farming also has exploded in North Carolina. On major highways, it's not unusual to see trucks carrying hundreds of turkeys or chickens in stacked cages with feathers flying. The state ranks first in the U.S. for overall poultry production. The U.S. Department of Agriculture estimates North Carolina has 1 billion turkeys and chickens, more than 90 times the human population. We know a lot less about the poultry industry because North Carolina doesn't issue poultry permits or track poultry the way it does hogs.
Poultry farms are North Carolina's number one agricultural business, yet there's so much secrecy around them. They're not inspected, they're not permitted. neighbors aren't told if they're coming to their town. Local governments have no say in them.
That's Gavin Off, who was an investigative reporter on the team that produced the award-winning series Big Poultry in 2022 for the Raleigh News and Observer and Charlotte Observer. Off and his colleagues mapped the industry's growth using satellite data to identify nearly 4,700 farms in 79 counties. All those hogs and birds mean billions of dollars in revenues and thousands of jobs at big food companies like Smithfield, Tyson, and Purdue, and at the local farms that contract to grow the animals for them. But they also mean massive amounts of waste. Hogs produce 3.5 times the amount of solid waste as humans. Larry Baldwin is the North Carolina coordinator for the Pure Farms, Pure Waters campaign of the International Waterkeeper Alliance.
We're raising too many animals in too small an area for the environment to really handle it.
He says the growth of hog and poultry CAFOs is like a massive migration of humans from the country to the city, but without building sewage systems.
When we moved from the countryside into cities, you know, we went from an outhouse process of processing waste to doing a wastewater treatment plant type of thing. Well, we're not doing that same thing with the CAFOs.
At large hog farms, waste is sent into special ponds or lagoons, where solids settle to the bottom and decompose, and liquids rise to the top. Those liquids are sprayed onto nearby fields as fertilizer. Flying over Sampson County, you can see it doesn't always go where it's supposed to, says Cape Fear riverkeeper Kent Burdett.
Down on the left side of the plane, there's a 4-barn hog farm spraying right now. First thing I saw when we took off, and of course, it's pretty windy out, so quite a bit of drift on that spray.
These practices haven't changed in decades, even though new lagoon and spray farms were banned in 1997 because of environmental concerns. Meanwhile, poultry farms collect piles of bird poop and spread it on fields nearby or truck it to farmers elsewhere.
Down below us here, you can see poultry litter on the field there. Down to your right, if you look kind of more down, you see those piles of,
yes,
well, that's poultry litter. Those piles should not be left out for more than 15 days, but that frequently happens, 15 months even.
That waste is chock full of chemicals such as phosphorus, ammonia, and nitrogen, as well as harmful bacteria and viruses like swine flu and avian flu. Neighbors say these operations smell bad and can make them sick. Science confirms that. Public health researchers have found that CAFOs can lead to respiratory illnesses, heart and kidney trouble, and other issues. Farmers argue that they have to follow strict rules, both in government regulations and as part of their contracts with big food companies that take their animals. Roy Lee Lindsay of the North Carolina Pork Council says farmers have been caring for the environment for centuries and run their farms sustainably.
They live there too. I mean, our folks overwhelmingly live on their farms. They're not going to create an environment where they don't want to live. So they raise their kids there.
As I noted near the top of the show, in 2007, North Carolina banned new and expanded hog farms that rely on the lagoon and spray system. The hope? New technologies or waste management strategies would emerge. But apart from some experiments with converting hog waste to biogas, little has changed for the hog industry. But what has changed is an explosion of poultry farms, a lightly regulated industry that's prompted some new environmental concerns.
The lagoon and spray system for hog waste was developed with help from North Carolina State University. In the 1980s, it helped speed a shift away from small farms to big CAFOs, thousands of hogs confined in huge barns. In the past 20 years, the poultry industry has evolved in the same way, with most chickens and turkeys now being raised indoors on huge farms. North Carolina now has at least 1 billion birds laying eggs or being raised for meat.
The livestock industry has been transformed into really a corporate agricultural industry dominated by huge multinational corporations.
That's James Merchant. He's the former dean of public health at the University of Iowa and co-author of a 2024 book on CAFOs and public health.
Up to about 1960, these were independent farmers. The chickens were raised in coops, open coops, so they had access to the outside world. Pigs were all raised in pasture and in small sties.
As big farms multiplied, environmental groups and farm neighbors have argued that raising so many animals in smaller spaces threatens water and air quality and public health. They cite numerous environmental and public health studies. Blakely Hildebrand is a lawyer with the Southern Environmental Law Center, which has represented environmental and community groups in lawsuits seeking cleaner farming practices.
CAFOs present a pollution problem, they present a human health problem, and a justice issue, right? Because the folks who are most impacted by this industry are communities of color.
In 1997, North Carolina lawmakers acknowledged these concerns, at least about hog farming. That year, they passed a moratorium on new or expanded lagoon-based hog farms. They made the ban permanent in 2007 with unanimous votes in both houses. That ended the hog industry's rapid growth in the state. Roy Lee Lindsay is with the North Carolina Pork Council.
In 97, North Carolina adopted what really were some of the most stringent and still remain the most stringent environmental regulations in the country. And one of the things that was included in that was essentially a moratorium on building new farms. Unless we were going to fundamentally change the technologies that we use to manage manure, you couldn't build a new farm.
Environmental and community groups applauded the 2007 law. They said the move would lead to more environmentally friendly hog farming, but little has changed. Hog farmers dispute the idea that living near a farm can be unhealthy or that people of color are disproportionately affected. They argue that their farming practices are sound. They say they have to follow strict rules, both government regulations and under their contracts with big food companies. Lindsay says farmers have been caring for the environment for centuries and run their farms sustainably.
They live there too. I mean, our folks overwhelmingly live on their farms. They're not going to create an environment where they don't want to live. They raise their kids there.
North Carolina's 2007 law envisioned that hog farmers eventually would come up with something better. But existing farms weren't required to change how they handle waste. 18 years later, the question remains, what might replace the lagoon and spray system? The primary alternative is what's called biogas, something we saw while flying over Sampson County recently with Cape Fear Riverkeeper Kemp Burdett.
One of your points is coming up off the wing here.
Okay. So you can see there's a biogas digester down there on this facility, that black covered tarp next to the larger lagoon.
Now the digester, is that essentially a covered pond?
That is a covered lagoon, captures methane, sends that methane to an upgrading station where the methane is basically scrubbed of impurities.
That purified gas goes into a commercial gas pipeline to be burned as fuel. But this remains a mostly experimental technology used at only a handful of hog farms.
Is it possible one day they could cover all of them or not?
No, because you still have to spray. You know, until they do away with the spray fields, you will need an uncovered lagoon to spray. And there's just as much spraying happening with covered lagoons as there is with uncovered.
It's impossible to know much about complaints by Burdett or other members of the public. A 2014 state law prohibits the State Department of Environmental Quality, or DEQ, from making individual complaints public unless they result in a violation notice. Over the past 2 years, the Water Quality Division got 72 complaints, which resulted in just 7 violations. Penalties averaged no more than a couple of $1,000s each. The state has just 16 people on staff to carry out annual inspections and investigate complaints at more than 2,000 hog farms and the limited number of egg-laying poultry operations that it oversees. Under North Carolina law, most poultry farms don't need permits and don't require regular inspections the way hog farms do. Burdett says his complaints about poultry farms go unheard.
Our organization has made hundreds of referrals on poultry over the years. And to the best of our knowledge, the state has never issued a notice of deficiency or a notice of violation for improper storage of poultry litter.
DEQ says on its website it has the nation's strongest permit program for swine CAFOs, including annual inspections of every facility. But Burdett says farmers get several weeks' notice, and inspectors often don't find much when they arrive. DEQ offered only a boilerplate statement saying it investigates complaints. They declined to make anyone available for an on-the-record interview and did not comment directly on inspections. Poultry farms are growing, not only near hog farms in the eastern part of the state, but also in other areas, such as western North Carolina. Catawba Riverkeeper Brandon Jones, based in the Charlotte area, estimates there are 1,200 poultry facilities with 60 million birds in the Catawba Basin. He'd like North Carolina to require poultry permits, more public disclosure of farm locations, and stricter enforcement.
It's difficult for us as an organization to effectively work on this issue because of the political climate, to be honest. It's something where we have spent a tremendous amount of resources over the years, and we'll continue to do so to measure and monitor these areas. But we know that it's an uphill battle.
State Representative Pricey Harrison of Greensboro would like to fix the problem. Every legislative session in recent years, including this year, she's filed a bill to require permits for large poultry farms. It also calls for poultry waste management plans, like those required for hogs. And it would ban poultry waste operations in 100-year floodplains. Every year, it dies in committee, and it will again this year, says Harrison.
It's just hard to take on an industry like that, and it's become more and more corporatized. It's just not the environment that's impacted. It's really the neighbors that, honestly, whose lives are impacted.
All right. Well, we need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear more from environmental reporter David Borax as he goes boots on ground to hear from those impacted by CAFOs, but also spend some time on a family-run farm to get their perspective as well. I'm Ben Schachman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for staying with us. As part of our series, CAFO Country, we've already unpacked how we got into the current state of affairs with CAFOs, with hog farms in limbo and poultry operations expanding rapidly. But what do the environmental concerns that come along with all that look like on the front lines? And what do industry officials say about CAFOs? Environmental journalist David Borax headed to Sampson County to find out.
Sampson County is in the middle of North Carolina's hog and poultry country. About 1.9 million hogs live in the county, most in the nation, just ahead of neighboring Duplin County. And local farms raise more than 100 million poultry every year, including 6.5 million turkeys, number one in the state. To see what this means for neighbors, I visited environmental and community activist Sherry White Williamson at her office in Clinton.
Hey!
Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Good.
Good to see you again.
You too.
White Williamson is a Sampson County native and executive director of the Environmental Justice Community Action Network. She co-founded the group after she retired from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency in 2015. She says massive animal farms began concentrating here more than 30 years ago. The area is also home to a large pork processing plant downtown, a wood pellet factory, and the state's largest regional landfill. All these operations have a cumulative effect on public health, says Williamson.
The industries generally are in low-income communities or minority communities or a combination of both. And we already know that health outcomes in many of these communities are not as good as in other communities.
A study out this spring from researchers at Johns Hopkins University found that people who live near industrial hog operations are at risk from hog waste bacteria, both outside and inside their homes. That's on top of past studies that show hog and poultry waste can pollute nearby waterways. This pollution can increase risks for asthma and other respiratory illnesses, heart conditions, high blood pressure, diabetes, and even depression. To see more, we hopped into her car.
We'll start out by going by a home of one of our citizens that's about 200 yards from a 14-barn CAFO. 10 of those are turkeys and 4 of those are hogs.
Duplin and Sampson counties are home to about half the state's hogs and half the waste. Massive barns hold 1,000 or more animals each. Waste typically flows into holding ponds called lagoons. There it separates into solids and liquids, which are periodically sprayed on nearby crop fields as fertilizer. Annual state inspections are required, but violation notices are few. And it's not just hogs. Increasingly, CAFOs in eastern North Carolina are diversified with both hogs and poultry, says Williamson.
If you find one, more than likely you're going to find the other very close by.
67-year-old Rayford Bennett lives next door to a large hog and poultry operation. It's about 8 miles from downtown Clinton, at the end of a dirt road that bears the family name. Bennett's have lived here for generations. Bennett and his dog come out to meet us.
Hey, Mr. Bennett.
I know. I didn't realize it had been 6 months.
It's been quite a while.
You can smell the animals next door, but it's not overwhelming today. I asked Bennett what it's like to live so close.
It ain't nothing good, that's for sure. Everything taken away from you, you think you're in a box all the time, so.
What's bad about it?
Everything. I mean, you can't come out or do nothing. It's all but manure smell all the time, and you just think you're somewhat in the prison.
You mean you got to stay inside some days?
Lots of days, I mean. Say it goes to spring, you got to get inside. It stinks.
State records show that the farm next to Bennett has about 10,000 hogs and has been inspected annually. In the most recent inspection, no illegal waste discharges or other violations were found. Meanwhile, there's no public information for the poultry operation. While the State Department of Environmental Quality regulates hog CAFOs, it mostly takes a hands-off approach to poultry farms. Just a handful of a particular type of farm face inspections, while nearly 5,000 aren't regulated and don't require permits. And while chicken waste is supposed to be removed after 15 days, White Williamson says that doesn't always happen, even when she's complained.
They won't just take the word of a local resident who's seen it there. So that means a pile of poultry litter could theoretically be out in a field somewhere for 30 days or more.
State water quality officials didn't want to be interviewed on tape for this story. They told me they hear about poultry violations mainly through complaints. But again, the state rarely issues violations. A decade ago, hundreds of residents sued hog farmers, but even the highest profile judgment was cut down to a fraction of the original award, and other suits led only to small settlements. In 2017, a state law significantly limited potential damages in future suits. Rayford Bennett says he fears there's nothing he can do about the air and water issues he faces.
You can say all you want to, but then they ain't going to do too much about the hog farmers. I mean, they rude Saxon County.
By the way, Bennett worked 20 years at Smithfield's processing plant in Clinton, another nuisance for neighbors. That's where we're headed next. At midday, the smell begins to build over downtown. White Williamson stops the car briefly next to a chain-link fence on the backside of the Smithfield plant, which can process more than 10,000 hogs a day. Steam rises from parts of the plant, which is in a mostly black neighborhood of small houses.
It used to be a lot more populated. There were little stores over here and that kind of thing for the convenience of the community, but all of that has long been gone.
She says that's partly because of the plant.
The odor affects the property values, obviously, of these folks over here. They cannot sell the property, at least not for what they'd be able to get for the property if it were in some other area, not close to a facility like this.
White Williamson says the smell is so bad that people keep their doors and windows closed, even on the hottest days.
Some of them actually burn incense or candles all day just to try to keep the odor down. And obviously, depending on what you're burning, that could be an air quality issue in the home.
Finally, we drive out of town, past closed textile, glass, and manufacturing plants. From there, we head east from Clinton to the Duplin County line to see another new industry taking hold here, biogas generated from hog waste.
We're headed out to Turkey. I'm going to show you the Align facility, which is the biogas facility here. And there is a second facility called Montauk, which is using hog waste to create some type of energy.
Those companies, Montauk Renewables and Align RNG, call it Renewable Natural Gas, or RNG. Align is a partnership between Virginia-based Dominion Energy and Smithfield Foods. Here's how it works. The farmer installs a cover over a waste lagoon. Methane escaping from the decaying waste is captured and piped to a refining plant. From there, it's sent into the local natural gas pipeline and sold for energy. This could be an answer to North Carolina's animal waste problem, but it's expensive, and right now, covered lagoons are few and far between. Roy Lee Lindsay of the North Carolina Pork Council says North Carolina has some of the most stringent rules in the nation for handling hog waste. Today's lagoon and spray systems are a far cry from decades ago, when manure was unmanaged and often wound up in creeks. At least for now, we don't have anything better, says Lindsay.
If we could identify another system that worked as efficiently as does lagoon and spray fields, that appropriately handled waste as does lagoon and spray fields, and was economically viable, we would adopt it.
In other words, other waste disposal methods are too expensive and would lead to fewer farms, less pork available at the grocery store, and higher prices. Sherry White Williamson says nobody wants to see the industry go away.
It's not about putting any of these businesses out of business because they are a part of the economy. It's about figuring out how all of us can live together better and have a better quality of life.
The question is when the promise of cleaner waste management practices might be realized.
The growth of concentrated animal feeding operations, or CAFOs, has changed the landscape of eastern North Carolina in recent decades. Big companies now depend on North Carolina farmers to supply the hogs, chickens, and turkeys that wind up on our grocery store shelves. But what about the farmers? In the final segment of our series, CAFO Country, reporter David Borax visited a farmer in Goldsboro who has taken over and expanded her family's farm.
Marlo Ivy yells through a barn door on one of the three hog farms she owns in Wayne County. The pigs grunt back at her. Ivy took over the operation from her dad, Bob Ivy, who farmed it for more than 40 years. She now raises about 25,000 hogs under contract to the big pork companies, Smithfield and Prestige Farms. She bought some of the land from her father and uncle 2 years ago. Last year, she added 6 turkey barns on another 32 acres next to the Air Force Base in Goldsboro. As a 40-year-old third-generation farmer, she takes it personally when she hears people criticize her industry.
The reason that we raise these hogs in barns is actually to protect the environment. I feel like sometimes I get lost in translation and people don't understand, you know, the day in and day out of being on a family farm. But when people use terms like factory and discredit us, it can be frustrating, especially as a millennial farmer.
Ivy says she faces a challenge her father and grandfather didn't, the need to continually educate people about where their food comes from.
It's not all rainbows and butterflies. I mean, agriculture is hard. And that's why it's important for me to do interviews with people like you who are curious about, you know, how important this is to us and what we do to continue a legacy and protect the environment. And I want to teach the same morals to my kids about the land and working the land as my dad and grandfather did.
Her father also grew up on the farm. His father grew tobacco and raised poultry. Bob says he switched to hogs with help from NC State University.
In 79, I got interested in pig farming, seriously, and NC State was having a program for young farmers to get them away from tobacco.
He says raising hogs in barns actually addresses environmental problems with pasture-raised animals. Manure just isn't managed as well, he says, and the animals tend to root up the soils, kill the trees, and risk more illnesses. Bob was one of the first farmers to introduce the lagoon and spray system for hog waste, in which manure is collected in ponds and then sprayed on nearby farm fields as fertilizer.
So I was part of that group that really took hogs from being on the ground to putting them in confinement.
State law requires farmers to show how they'll manage waste so it doesn't run off into nearby waterways or wetlands. That means calculating the amount of waste and the area needed to spray it without oversaturating the land, says Bob. Most farmers meet the state standards. We walk out behind the barns to the pond.
So tell me how this works.
On this particular one, an extension agent designed it. The size is based on the number of animals. It's probably about 20 feet deep. The bottom level is for sludge. Then it has a treatment level. And then there, it has to have 24 inches of freeboard.
That's the distance between the water and the wall of the lagoon. The nutrient-rich wastewater from the lagoon rises and falls with both rainfall and how often it's pumped onto nearby hay and cornfields, says Bob. The red-brown color comes from bacteria at work. The ponds are pumped out only when it's safe and won't run off, says Marlo Ivy.
We're not pumping out here when it's raining. At one of my farms I checked, I applied 19 times last year. I pumped 19 days, not all day.
Besides reporting the pond's level, she also has to measure and report how much manure sludge is at the bottom of the lagoon. That gets dredged out occasionally and also used as fertilizer, Bob Ivy says. Marlo Ivy's hog farms have clean records, according to North Carolina DEQ reports. The state legislature hasn't allowed a new or expanded operation like this since 1997, amid concerns about the environment. but it did not outlaw existing lagoons. The idea was to give farmers time to come up with alternatives.
The hog farmer in eastern North Carolina has really done a lot to reduce their environmental footprint.
Bob Ivey says dozens of lagoons have been removed after major hurricanes, and farmers these days use feed additives to reduce the nitrogen and phosphorus in manure, and some farms are experimenting with covered lagoons that capture methane for natural gas, which goes into the gas pipeline system for energy. But those lagoons still need to be pumped out and sprayed, says Bob. Marlo Ivey says she'd like to introduce covered lagoons at her farm someday, but it would be a big investment, and it would never entirely replace lagoons, says Bob Ivey.
To be quite honest with you, I think that they complement each other really well.
I would agree with that.
And so the lagoons have done a really good job. They're well designed.
Public health researchers have found that CAFOs can lead to respiratory illnesses, heart and kidney trouble, and other ailments. That's why they're a target for residents and environmental activists. But the Ivies have lived on farms their whole lives, raising kids and employing workers, without illness. Marlo Ivey says she and her kids are healthy.
We're so used to that narrative that's been spread for years about the environmental or the health impacts of hog farms. And I mean, my kids are here every day. They participate in these farms. We don't have any health issues.
Bob Ivey thinks a bigger reason for environmental and water quality issues in eastern North Carolina is simply population growth and development. Hog farms haven't been expanded in decades, yet he says people still point the finger at farmers.
There's a whole lot more people. And there's actually technology now that you can go and determine where the manure comes from. And over half of the water quality problems are municipalities, septic systems, golf courses.
Cities and towns are allowed to discharge wastewater into waterways. Bob says farmers can't do that. They have no discharge permits. Roy Lee Lindsay, CEO of the North Carolina Pork Council, says any effort to require major changes to animal waste management would threaten the industry. He says stricter regulations would dramatically reduce the number of farms and hogs.
You're not going to find pork in the grocery store the way you do today, and you're not going to be able to buy it at the price you are today.
Marlo Ivey says she and other farmers are always trying to get better.
We're producing more hogs with less environmental footprint than we did, you know, 30, 40 years ago. I think that's a huge testimony to the environmentalism that farmers practice.
Community and environmental advocates in North Carolina want to see more, but at least for now, the laws and regulations favor the status quo for farmers and big food producers.
All right, well, we need to take one more quick break, but when we come back, we'll sit down with David Borax to recap some of the key takeaways from his reporting. Plus, we'll talk with Inside Climate News' Lisa Sorg to dig even deeper into some of the environmental concerns around CAFOs. I'm Ben Schachman. You're listening to The Newsroom. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Newsroom. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for staying with us. As we wrapped up our four-part CAFO Country series, I wanted to sit down with journalist David Borax to try and recap and encapsulate the deep dive that he had taken for us to get his takeaways from the reporting. All right, with me now is David Borax. He's a writer, editor, and photographer. You may know him from his long career as a reporter, producer, and host at our sister station in Charlotte, WFAE. He's now a freelance journalist, and he has produced for us a four-part series on CAFOs, that's concentrated animal feeding operations, that aired all this week. And you can find that series, CAFO Country, at whqr.org. So, David, thank you so much for this reporting series, and thank you for being here today.
Happy to do it, Ben.
Okay, so my first question, when it comes to North Carolina's pork industry, much of what we're talking about is this lagoon and spray operation. And so for the uninitiated, what is that?
So when farmers decided to move pigs out of pastures and into large barns, they needed a way to handle all that waste. Experts from North Carolina State University worked with extension agents and farmers to come up with the system that's used at most farms in the state now. You have thousands of hogs in each barn, and their waste drops down into tanks below. The waste is then flushed into ponds or lagoons. They're typically 15 or 20 feet deep, and the waste is periodically sprayed on nearby farm fields as fertilizer. They use a system of pumps, pipes, and giant sprinklers for that. The solids are also spread on the fields, though not as often.
Right. And as you report, you know, a lot of academic and industry work went into modernizing this lagoon and spray system, and it certainly provided some benefits for the hog industry, but it also poses some pretty significant environmental and health concerns.
For one, the lagoons and especially the spraying can smell bad and make people sick. Neighbors of hog farms have sued and won financial judgments over this. But that's harder than ever to do since the General Assembly passed restrictions 8 years ago. Environmental and community activists say that poultry and hog manure are a public health risk, and that's backed up by numerous studies. It contains chemicals such as phosphorus, ammonia, and nitrogen, as well as harmful bacteria and viruses. There was one study out this spring that detailed how manure particles can collect in people's yards and even inside their houses. And nutrients and animal waste also can flow into waterways and wetlands, fouling the water and damaging ecosystems.
So in addition to that study that you just mentioned, I know that you reported historically there's been a number of studies on the health impacts, but also on different ways to possibly deal with hog waste. But what is sort of the status of that research right now and going forward?
Yeah, there are new studies coming out all the time about the health impacts and environmental impacts of hog CAFOs and poultry CAFOs, but I'm not sure we're going to see as much of that in the future. And we just had an example recently where the Trump administration canceled a federal grant that was funding research into the social and economic impacts of CAFOs in North Carolina specifically. And it looks like that study is dead for now. So we could see less of this in the future.
You know, one thing your reporting has helped frame for me, and I hope for listeners and readers, is just how long this issue has been going on. I mean, back in the 1990s, the state legislature put a moratorium on new lagoon and spray farms, and almost two decades ago, that turned into a permanent ban. So what's been going on with that, and why do we still see so many of these farms?
Well, that's a good question. Back in the mid-1990s, lawmakers pretty much agreed that these systems were a problem. In 1997, they imposed a moratorium, and that became a permanent ban in 2007. The whole idea was to buy time for finding new ways of dealing with hog waste. The state didn't outlaw existing farms, but it banned new ones or expansions that used the lagoon and spray setups. Practically speaking, it means North Carolina can have up to 8 or 9 million hogs and remain a top U.S. hog producer indefinitely. There really haven't been any major technological advances to replace lagoons. We have a few covered lagoons that capture methane for use as natural gas, but that's still just experimental.
One thing some farmers and industry groups told you is that there are more ecologically friendly ways to farm pigs, but not ones that are financially viable. So how has that tension played out?
Some environmentalists compare the growth of hog farms to when people moved into cities. You know, we develop sewage systems to handle that growth. There's no such thing for animals, and pork industry experts say that requiring that kind of waste treatment would force some farms to close and make pork more expensive. Meanwhile, with the growth of hog operations restricted by law, farmers began looking for new ways to generate revenue and grow, and for many that's meant poultry. We now have about 1 billion chickens and turkeys in North Carolina, most in the eastern part of the state.
Right, and you reported that, look, there are some concerns about the environmental impacts of pork CAFOs, but it's heavily regulated. That's not the case for poultry.
That's right. And thanks to laws that favor the industry, we don't even know exactly how many poultry farms there are in North Carolina. And there are far fewer restrictions on chickens and turkeys. A few years ago, investigative journalists at the Raleigh News and Observer and Charlotte Observer worked with environmentalists and used satellite data to come up with an estimate, 4,700 farms in 79 counties. State agriculture officials probably have a clearer picture, but their data is secret by law. And they don't even share it with state environmental officials who police water and air quality. There have been efforts at the legislature to require waste management plans and other regulations similar to hogs, but every year those bills have died in committee.
So was there anything in your reporting that like really surprised you or that you think would surprise readers and listeners?
Several things, really, Ben. North Carolina has just 16 inspectors for making sure animal waste isn't a public health threat to our water. Also, I didn't realize how the status quo for hogs is really entrenched by state law. There's no incentive for serious efforts to come up with a replacement for the lagoon and spray system. You know, that was a goal 2 decades ago, but we hardly hear about it. And finally, it's oversimplifying to see farmers as the problem. You know, they're our neighbors and local business people. Farmers like Marlo Ivy in Goldsboro, in part 4 of our series, are doing everything they can to follow the rules, not only state rules, but strict requirements of the companies they grow for. The law allows them to operate the way they do. If we want to change that, it'll take big innovations and close negotiations with the industry to come up with something that balances economics and the environment.
All right. Environmental journalist David Borax, who put together the CAFO Country series for us here at WHQR. Excellent reporting. Thank you so much for your work. And thanks for being here today.
You're welcome, Ben.
As we were running our CAFO Country series, we saw some reporting from Lisa Sorg at Inside Climate News about a federal grant designed to fund a study of the impacts of hog farms in North Carolina, which was canceled by the Trump administration. It was swept up in a mass purge of over 1,000 grants as part of efforts to remove so-called wokeness from federal programs, in this case, the EPA. As it happened, Lisa was headed into Wilmington for an interview over at UNCW and was good enough to stop into the WHQR studios so we could catch up on the latest from her reporting on the grant, CAFOs, and what's known as biogas. All right, well, Lisa Sorg, thank you very much for being here today.
I'm thrilled to be here.
So we are talking about biogas. It's still a little bit of an experiment in the hog industry as a way to handle the waste that comes out of CAFOs in particular. So what is this industry like? What does this look like?
Well, the biogas industry right now is largely led by a partnership between Smithfield and Dominion. Align RNG is the name of their partnership. And what they do is they have a conditioning facility in I guess it's between Turkey and Warsaw, and I mean that in North Carolina, not in the international sense. But and what happens is they have farms, participating farms, that put these gigantic covers on one of their lagoons. It's usually just one. And then they capture the methane gas. They inject it into a pipeline, which then goes through the countryside over to the Align facility, and which they then condition it because swine gas is, quote-unquote, dirty, meaning it's not up to standard of fossil fuel gas. And then they inject the clean gas into a pipeline that then Duke Energy and its subsidiaries use for electricity. That's the chain of events that happens.
So, and there are some literal and figurative holes in this system because it has been put forward as the long-awaited answer to the problem of CAFOs, which is, you know, hog waste. There's a moratorium in the 90s and then a ban in 2007 that was designed to give the industry time to figure out how to deal with the waste. This has been put forward as the lead, as a leading candidate of how to do it. And your reporting surfaced, you know, some of the concerns about it.
Well, I think the people who live near these farms that have the biogas digesters is what they're called, would argue that they're still using the spray field system, because what happens is there's one covered lagoon, but there's usually a secondary lagoon for the overflow. So that is still in the open air, still sending methane into the atmosphere, still stinking. And to lower that lagoon level, they still have to spray the waste on a field. So it's not the comprehensive solution that is being posited by the industry, at least from the neighbor's view and the environmentalist view. And, you know, that sprayed waste still goes into the groundwater. It still can go into the surface water. And so I think the neighbors would also argue this still just entrenches the way that they dispose of their waste. I know in Iowa, for example, they inject it into the ground, which still has groundwater implications, but at least it's not in the air. So there are other advanced technologies, but biogas is the way they've chosen.
And you've noted there's also some concerns about maybe actual leaks in the pipeline, and also when the gas that's coming off of the waste fields is, you know, as you put it, refined down, there's some byproducts there too.
Right. So a couple things about these pipelines. They're gathering lines. They're at lower pressure than what you think of maybe as a Transco or a huge pipeline. But number one, they do leak. All pipelines leak, especially in those elbows or, you know, just weak spots. We don't know the location of these gathering lines because they're secret. Align RNG has never disclosed them. They say they don't have to. They say it's national security. And the U.S. Army Corps, when they were doing a wetlands analysis to see if any of these pipelines were going to encroach upon wetlands, they wouldn't tell me. The only way I was able to kind of figure out where they might be is that I was able to get the latitude and longitude of the wetlands they were looking at and then think, well, there must be a pipeline nearby. But the other thing that's important, once it gets to the conditioning facility, that facility itself is a huge polluter. It is something, the one Align RNG, it might be a Title V, and that sounds really wonky, but a Title V or a synthetic minor is a step down. These are for major pollution, major sources of emissions. So it's not super clean.
Yeah, and just a quick note, I've heard this too. The national security concern, I have been told, is that gas will explode, and it is hard to guard an entire pipeline, and so it could be vulnerable to attacks if people knew where they are. Is that the basic gist of what you heard?
Yes, that's the basic gist. But, I mean, allegedly, these are very low pressure, and, you know, we shouldn't worry. So why are we worried?
Interesting, yeah. So let's move on to this study. This was a $417,000 federal grant. It was going to fund a study to look at, I believe it was economic and environmental impacts of the biogas industry. What specifically were they trying to investigate here?
Well, they were trying to find out what kind of pollutants were in the air and in the water near the farms that have these digesters, just to see, you know, a comparison of were they actually better on the environment, worse, you know, what was going on, and also to interview residents about their views of biogas. This was supposed to be a very neutral survey. They, you know, it was went under peer review in terms of the methodology. So there wasn't supposed to be any kind of leading questions, just how do you feel about it? What are the benefits? What are the detriments? And so they got a little bit of baseline data, but, you know, it was bare bones, and then the Trump administration cut the grant, and it was through RTI and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
And this fell victim alongside, I think, over, you know, 1,000 other grants, hundreds of millions of dollars of grants, to efforts to root out, quote unquote, wokeness from the EPA's agenda or from federal grants in general. And there, I mean, I think probably the reason it got triggered is that there is some racial disparities in the impact of CAFO farming. Is that kind of what the issue was?
Yes, there are environmental justice issues with the location of CAFOs and, you know, the biodigester facilities, because most of the CAFOs in North Carolina are east of 95 or in that, you know, the eastern part. And that's a heavily Black, Indigenous, and Latino population. The census data bears that out. And so there is a very strong environmental justice aspect. We saw that in the federal nuisance trials against Smithfield, which Smithfield lost, went 0-5. And we saw who is being affected. So I think this grant was probably swept up into the wokeness allegation.
So the grant was stopped, the funding was stopped, but they did get some kind of baseline data. What did we learn from that?
We learned that, for example, there were surface waters that had elevated bacteria that would come from hogs or possibly people, but more likely hogs. You can get a DNA fingerprint if you were going to do more research on that to see the kind of intestines that waste came from. And they also found high levels of phosphorus in some samples. And why that matters is because phosphorus is like the Golden Corral buffet for algal blooms. You know, they just love it. They eat it up. It's the all-you-can-eat buffet. And so algal blooms obviously have a detrimental effect on the environment. If they happen to be a certain kind of algae, they can even be toxic. So you don't want algal blooms in your waterways, and phosphorus is a big driver of that.
So, big picture here, the hog industry, as we were talking about off mics, not going anywhere. Despite a ban in of new farms and expanded farms in 2007, it is still a major economic, agricultural part of North Carolina life. And so the concerns that come along with CAFO farming are still here with us almost 20 years later. For people who are like brand new to this, you know, what do those concerns look like?
There are quality of life concerns. I covered all those federal nuisance trials. And for the new folks, basically what happened, some neighbors of CAFOs in North Carolina sued Smithfield for private nuisance, saying that the presence of their farms and the way they were operating them interfered with the enjoyment of their property. And that's kind of the definition of a private nuisance. And what we heard is that, for example, the spray fields are often very close to the homes. So there would be people out on their porch that would get sprayed with hog waste, or they couldn't put their clothes out on the line because they'd bring them in and they would smell like hog waste. Their drinking water they were concerned about because of the groundwater contamination. There was a church, I remember, they were not part of the trial, but I visited the church, that had to dig a new well because they had some kind of contamination that was a byproduct of farming. And so, in essence, the people who live near these have a different viewpoint than those of us who are just, you know, going to the barbecue in our backyard. We don't know just how bad it is. And I have been to those residences that are near these farms, and I don't know how they live there.
I do know I've seen reporting where people went randomly to towns and looked straight into the camera and said it's not that bad. I've also heard it depends very much on the weather, the wind direction, the temperature, whether or not they're spraying that day. So I think some people have seen reporting and said, oh, no, these concerns are overblown. I have been, like you, I have been on our front porch and felt it, and it is not pleasant.
It is not, and you don't know when it's going to hit, so you can't really plan your birthday party outside around this. And so, yeah, and I think some people, you know, during the trials, for example, the farm owners would say, well, we don't smell anything. We raise our kids right there. After a while, they probably have become nose blind. You know, they don't smell it anymore because it's just in their heads, not meaning imaginary, but, you know, they just have smelled it so much they're no longer sensitive to it. But, you know, I was at the Warsaw rest stop on the way here today, and there was a big whiff that came through. And let's just say the bouquet was pungent.
Yeah. concise and evocative description. All right. Well, anything else that you would want to add about this issue? I know you've covered it a lot.
I would just add that I understand why farmers are trying to find a solution to this very intractable problem, but I'm unconvinced from the science so far that biogas is the way to go because there is still methane and ammonia and all those things that enter the atmosphere. And, you know, we won't even get into the humane or the lack of humane conditions that these hogs are raised in. So there are a lot of ethical questions I have as well. But as you say, as long as people want to eat pork and as long as you ship it overseas, I know, you know, Smithfield ships a lot of their pork to China. As long as there's an appetite for it, it's going to be there.
There's definitely an appetite for it. Well, Lisa Sorg from Inside Climate News, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here.
All right. Well, that's just about all the time we have for this edition of The Newsroom. Thanks to David Borax, who wrote and produced the CAFO Country series for WHQR, and to Lisa Sorg from Inside Climate News for sharing her insights. Thanks also to WHQR's program director, Ken Campbell, and a special thanks to the Fourth Estate Fund, which made our CAFO series possible. Music for today's show was provided by If These Trees Could Talk and Blue Dot Sessions. If you have comments, concerns, or just an idea for a future show, you can email us at newsroom@whqr.org. I'm Ben Schachman. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll join us for the next edition of The Newsroom.